Welcome to the Full of Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy, recording at 9:32 British Summer Time. Today is May 30th. Well, today in Japan, the Nikkei pulled back very sharply by over 5% and extended its decline. So it had that weekly key reversal last week and has extended that decline in here this week. But in the process, it's unwound more than half of its overbought condition relative to the 200-day moving average. And that being the case, we can see that a high degree of leverage is being squeezed out of the system. And one has to question whether it is a chicken and egg scenario with the yen at the current juncture. The yen was a little bit firmer in here today, by 0.45 of 1 yen versus the US dollar. And the dollar was weak against a number of currencies, not least the euro and the pound, where it lost approximately a cent in value. And the Australian dollar was a little bit steadier in here. And it's right down here at the 95 to 96 area. And it was as low today as 95.83, and it closed out the day at 96.67. So quite a range on the day, and it is quite overextended on the downside. And when we think about the action on some of the commodity markets, then there is potential for the Australian dollar to bounce in here. And it is right at the lower side of a more than 2-year range. So some steadying, even in a bear case scenario, some steadying in this region, at least in the short term, is really quite likely. If we return to Japan, just about everybody had been in on Japan, and there was a trader from one of the large investment banks was at the chart seminar in London a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying that his desk had been selling hedged exposure to the Japanese stock market for the last 4 or 5 months, and he said that it was basically all they'd been doing. And the leverage that was in that market was quite extensive. So even though the yen, even though it has steadied a little bit, it remains within a reasonably consistent downtrend. And it is oversold at the current time. And there is capacity for some further steadying for the yen, considering just how much it has weakened in the last number of months. And what we've definitely seen is that some of the leverage has been squeezed out of the stock market. And we've had this really quite violent pullback. So considering the fact that there is probably still a lot of people sitting on the sidelines saying that it was too expensive and that they were going to wait on the sideline until they get evidence of a pullback, well, this is most certainly a pullback. And all the reasons for why one might want to own Japan are still right there. There's nothing has changed, other than the fact that we've had this pullback. And that pullback isn't going to change the fundamentals. And in fact, it's probably more likely to spur politicians to not become complacent and to really get down to the nitty-gritty of implementing economic reforms. And the success of Japan is going to be tied not to its success in weakening its currency, but in how well it can introduce economic reforms. And that's really where this whole argument is going to hinge. Now, when we think about the price action and the effect that's had on sentiment, that has definitely checked the animal spirits. And it's really quite likely that the Japanese stock market isn't going to find support between here and the region of the 200-day moving average. And then it's going to need to build some support in order to give people pause, convince some of the people that are now sitting in cash on the sidelines that the breakout from this long base is going to be sustained and that the Japanese finally really do mean business. So we're in for probably some ranging for at least a few months in Japan before it has built enough of a consolidation to support higher levels in here. And in some of the other high-flying Asian stock markets, the Philippines today was a little bit weaker, and that really is quite overextended relative to its 200-day moving average. And what we have seen right across stock markets, not just in Asia, but is that an increasing number of those instruments that have been leading to the upside have moved into processes of consolidation, and some have pulled back really rather sharply. Now, broadly speaking, in Europe today, the majority of markets were reasonably positive, and the FTSE was stronger by about just a bit less than 1%, and the DAX by 0.75%. And the S&P, having been as high today as a region of 1660s, closing out the day at 1653, and it remains within this quite modest range. And the size of this range is quite consistent with what we've seen in the last 6 months, and that's a range of between 40 and 60 points. And if it's going to be anything like the last one, then we could spend upwards of a month in here, and that would at least help to partially unwind the overbought condition relative to the 200-day moving average. There was some less than economic news today that was not as good as people had anticipated, and that helped to spur the stock market in for a couple of hours in here today. But what we need is for the economy to do sufficiently well that corporate profits can improve, but not so well that the Fed will feel compelled to begin to tail back its liquidity provision. And that's a very fine line. So when we look at these stock markets and we see that there are these overbought conditions relative to the 200-day moving average, then at some point we have to bear in mind that the closest thing we have to a natural law of physics in the psychological world of the markets is that mean reversion is a fact, and that the more overextended an instrument gets relative to its 200-day moving average, the greater the likelihood is that it is going to revert back towards that mean. So we know that that's a possibility. And on the S&P, until we see a reaction of more than 60 points, we won't have confirmation that we're into a larger reaction and perhaps a swifter process of mean reversion. And in government bonds, JGBs were knocked back from the 1% level last week, and they are the yield is consolidating above the 200-day moving average. And considering the inflationary bias that the Japanese have, then JGBs are likely to continue to weaken in here, and will need a wall of money thrown at that market to maintain yields at very low levels. And when we look at the US, and we think about the quantitative easing programs that we have just about in every country, then the likelihood is that even if the Fed doesn't remove its quantitative easing or begin to tail back its quantitative easing until the end of the year, the Fed is probably still likely to be the central bank that removes its QE first. And the Japanese probably will be the last. So Japan is still very much in the early stages of a quantitative easing program, and it has really quite a long road to go in terms of achieving its economic goals. US treasuries are probably likely to consolidate in the 2% region, but if one were to strip away everything and look at the actual, just the pure chart action, it's a bullish chart, and it does look like we're going to see higher yields over the medium term. And that would suggest that the momentum that has been driving the market and supporting the market for such a long time is probably on its last legs. When we look at the commodity complex, oil was a little bit firmer in here today, but it has had a couple of weekdays. And with some slower economic news, then there isn't the patterns that we're presented with in the oil market right now aren't particularly bullish. And natural gas was also interesting in here today. It was down by 15 cents and pulling back quite sharply back to the $4 area. And if the medium-term bullish outlook for natural gas is to remain credible, then it will need to hold above its 200-day moving average. And that's not that far away in here right now. And the somewhat plausible bullish outlook for some of the coal producers is really contingent on natural gas prices remaining a little bit higher than they are right now. So what happens with natural gas is likely to have continued far-reaching effects on the rest of the commodity complex, the energy complex, I should say. And the precious metals, which have been a little bit out in the cold over the last number of months, have firmed in here today. And gold is back above $1,400 and has held above it for the first time in the last few weeks. And gold has been ranging above its mid-April lows and does look like it is going to now unwind at least part of its oversold condition relative to the 200-day moving average. In order for the bullish case to really get back some of its credibility, then we need to see gold back above $1,500. And let's see it get up to that level first and probably consolidate before it probably pushes higher from here. But in the very short term, it does look like we're going to see higher prices for gold and for silver. And both platinum and palladium are also looking more positive here. And platinum is rallying from the lower side of its more than 18-month range. And palladium, which has been by far the firmest in the complex and is pushing back up towards the upper side of its range and is back above $750 in here today. And in the industrial metal complex, zinc was firmer in here today, and so was lead. And copper has been holding here in the $3.30 region. And tin has been a little bit firmer, and nickel has been pretty much range-bound. So while the commentary that I've been hearing about the commodity complex is that it's negative all around, what we're actually presented with in terms of the price action is that the industrial metals have lost downward momentum, and an increasing number of them are starting to rally in here. And the materials and basic resources sector has been so unloved over the last year that its capacity to outperform in the short term and for some form of rotation to occur is, I think, still quite compelling in here. And I think with that, I will leave you for the evening, and I wish all the best to all of you.